Hello, world, and welcome to my show, Sight for Sound Life Coaching, with a twist. Sight for Sound. When you see things as they truly are, you make sound choices. I am your host and life coach, Janet Cleary, based in Los Angeles, originally from Boston. I call myself a life coach. I work with a myriad of individuals, from entrepreneurs to high-tech to single mothers to actors. I work with organizations, real estate and bankers and anybody or any type of company that wants to make some sort of positive change. And I basically assist people in getting out of their own way to create great results. So back to when I see things as they truly are, I make sound choices. When I work with people, they get to know themselves better, and they use that information to make wise choices and create great results. Some of the great results are in the areas of productivity, ownership and accountability, healthier relationships, confidence, balance, compassion, a greater sense of commitment, and purpose. I work with people in determining their life purpose and assisting them staying on purpose. So what do you desire more of in life? What areas would you like to enhance? And my question is, are you creating results that are worthy of you? And what I mean by that is you are worth a lot. You have an enormous potential that might not have been unleashed yet. And are the results in your life worthy of your potential? Because you are great, you are unique, and I believe that we all have a unique gift to contribute to the world and to nurture the human condition. I invite you to call into the show today, as always. We're going to have a lot of fun today. So if you just want a good laugh, listen in, and as usual, I invite you to call in and ask any questions or share some ideas and thoughts. Toll-free number is 877-876-5227, 877-876-5227. Direct line is 530-876-3222. And from Canada, toll-free number is 888-815-9756. And if you'd like to learn more about me and my services and what I have to offer, you may go to www.sightforsound.com. And if you're on the web right now on BBS Radio, my website information is there. And I welcome comments and questions. Today is the day that we are privileged to here and talk with Noel Murphy. He's based up in Santa Cruz, California. He's originally from Boston as well. And Noel Murphy, I think there are no words to truly describe this man. I think of him as a dear friend, a business associate. Amazing man. He is an extraordinary coach. He's a comedian. He's a funny comedic seminar leader. And he's the author of The Money Whisperer, which we are going to focus on today. Noel spoke at Harvard University, but let me just back up and do that with a Boston accent. Harvard University, when he was 10 years old. He has been mentored by and worked with Deepak Chopra, Brother Blue, Tony Robbins, Robert Bly, and I'm really delighted to have Noel Murphy here today. So, without further ado, Noel Murphy, welcome.
Jenna Kaleri, big round of applause. Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo! Oh, fantastic. Be still my heart.
Be still my heart.
Even my computer is sending me messages saying extra cooling is necessary. I was thinking it might say be cool, but it just says, hey, I'm overheating over here listening to the Janet Kaleri show. So,
well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I, with an introduction like that, I can die now.
Oh.
Did somebody read that introduction over my coffin? I'm a happy guy. Thank you very much. You even pronounced my name right.
It's pretty easy.
My mother has messed up my name. Ladies and gentlemen, my son, Neil Murphy. Hey, Mom!
Neil.
Not really, but... I'm really, really loving what I heard you talking about, Janet, in the beginning of your show, about what people want from life. And it's really... I think it's an interesting notion that, when people aren't motivated... You know, oftentimes they either don't believe they can have what they want or they're not even clear about what they want to begin with. So first and foremost, I am a major advocate for coaching. Not very few of our greats ever would have gotten there without the good counsel and good advising of their people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, put it this way, Martin Luther King had a coach and probably Gandhi, I believe it was his wife, who said something like, "You are not coming into this house until you do your homework." I'm not really sure. But
that sounds really romantic.
You know, that coaching has been around for years, since Dale Carnegie and way beyond.
Yes, it has.
And you know that Bill Clinton actually hired Anthony Robbins to work with him.
Wise choice.
So that was, yeah, and that was one of the very first places where coaching came on the national scene. But if we go back to 1960 in the election between Richard Nixon and Kennedy. Kennedy was the first presidential candidate to hire a media coach, which made the difference. He won by the narrowest margin in history.
Sure.
All because he allowed himself to step more fully into what it was he actually said he wanted. So he may have just... had a coach just simply remind him along the way about what he said was important when it was hardest for him to remember himself.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And I also think that working with a coach assists people in being okay with being known. And I think that worked for Kennedy and Clinton. Is he let himself be known and people... People follow those they feel closest to.
I'm following you right now.
Yeah.
I want you to know.
We go way back.
Well, actually, you might say we came up in the old neighborhood together.
Yes, we did.
The old leadership. We were part of a leadership gang.
A gang.
We did what we had to do to survive. Actually,
and we had a lot of fun doing it.
And
we still do it.
Yeah, and that wonderful, there's the self-discovery to become a leader, and then there's leading through self-discovery, and then there's, you know, leading self-discovery for others, and the whole while we're constantly, as coaches, becoming aware of certain things. And I think one of the biggest ones is how completely lovable and acceptable all of the picadillos and things that we were originally horrified in ourselves, all the downside. The dark side, shadow side, as they say, that all that stuff's okay.
It is okay.
It's all part of the deal.
I love it.
Well, you know, I like to take my, you know, I've even dressed up as my shadow self for Halloween once. And that took the form of Answer Boy. Ask me any question, I will make up a good answer because God forbid I ever don't know the answer. I'll just make something up.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Know-it-all?
Hi. You know, yeah, sure. That was.
Yeah.
So you know but also the idea of the personality, I think, that each one of us has. It's almost like a Saturday Night Live character that each one of us plays when we're really up against it and maybe in survival mode.
That's a great analogy, the Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. So.
Oh, Rosanna, Rosanna, Dana.
Hello, my little Rosanna, Rosanna, Dana. I love her. In fact, I saw Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor in Stir Crazy, and I never realized how incredibly great Gene Wilder's performance was. And of course, he was married to,
Gilda Radner. Isn't that her name?
Gilda. My God.
Gilda.
Let's all just have a moment, for Gilda. So,
and they embrace their dark side or whatever.
Well, they don't get a paycheck if they don't, stomp around in the rain puddle of their evil.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got to go all the way in, and most actors take that journey, but it's really interesting to ask people to make that same journey for leadership effectiveness. Seems like, you got to be kidding.
Mm-hmm.
So, interestingly enough, Sanford Meisner at the Neighborhood Playhouse in New York, training Robert Duvall and Robert De Niro, and, a long list of some of the greatest contributing actors in America for 30 years, all went through his process, which existed for 25 years before Est ever came on the scene.
This is true.
My brother Steve went to the Neighborhood Playhouse, and so he's come back with these stories. And, of course, Sandy Meisner isn't with us anymore, but has been just a major force in American acting. Life transformation, people being forced to deal with the truth about themselves, which usually yields some action steps. And that's the nice thing about actors. They don't actually have to do anything except play the character well. The rest of us have to go out. I'm kidding. All the actors listening.
Yes, I have some actors as clients.
I'm teasing you, folks.
Kidding. They know you're kidding.
I hope they do, because very few people will take on a role and play that role. Robin Williams in Awakenings, even somebody like Leonardo DiCaprio in the movie The Aviator. People don't come away from those movies having played these characters the same. They're changed by these journeys.
Yeah.
That's why Janet and I are willing to make a movie starring you.
We are doing that.
How much are we going to do? $20 million? Okay, for $50 million, Janet Kaleri and I will make a movie about your life starring you, only you cannot mess around with us when we're writing the script. You got to tell us the truth, baby.
Well, and it's actually a perfect time to do that because improv, I think, has center stage right now since there's the writer's strike.
Yeah.
Mr. Murphy.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell us a little bit about your history, and I would really enjoy talking about The Money Whisperer.
Got to say it real soft. The Money Whisperer.
The Money Whisperer.
I'm just figuring out that there's a way to say it. Oh.
There you go.
The follow-up will be The Money Bellower. Hey, you, dollar bill, get over here. Won't even be so subtle. So, my whole history has just led through so many things and incredible people I've gotten to work with. So when I was a kid, I worked with Brother Blue, who was Dr. Hugh Morgan Hill, a professor of divinity at Harvard University, who decided one day that it was not right to give grades. So he stopped giving grades, and of course that angered the higher-ups at the Harvard Divinity School and brought a bit of a separation. But Brother Blue has probably been around Harvard for more years than many of these people because he founded the Harvard Storytellers Workshop. But I met him when I was just turned 10, and he just grabbed onto me and said, "You're coming with me," and my parents didn't quite understand this really tall African-American man who had been the great-grandson of slaves coming to their house in the white suburbs to pick up their kid. But they took me everywhere.
And which, by the way, Noel and I grew up in...
One town apart.
And we weren't rivals in the sports world. One town apart.
But my town did feel slightly superior to your town. There was that. It wasn't in sports, but I don't know. I don't know where we felt. Bedford and Burlington being right next to each other.
Yeah,
so Brother Blue took me all over the Boston area and gave just so much, and allowed, you know, me to explore some very important notions. And, you know, he was being mentored by Buckminster Fuller at the time. So interestingly enough, he would go off with Buckminster Fuller for a week, and he'd come back and call me up, and we'd go and meet, and he'd be laying all this stuff on me that I'm realizing now is a staple in, you know, in the worlds of sustainability and design, and listening to Michael McCullough, his mm-hmm. recordings, and the green movement, and LEED certification. This stuff was all being discussed at an esoteric level back in the early 70s, and I had a front row seat without even really getting it. So it's interesting.
Wow. Well, Brother Blue must have known that you would get it sooner than later.
Well, it's interesting because I've seen him recently, and I will be going back to Harvard. I'm featured storyteller at the Harvard Storytellers Workshop in March, and I adore his presence. You know, and I'm talking about these people along the way that have had just a massive impact. You know, I got an email today from one of the most influential people in my adult life, which is... you know, to me, I call him the Uber coach because he's the guy that has coached all the coaches. You know, it's Phil Holcomb, who leads 21st Century Leadership through his company, Extraordinary Learning. And Randy Revelle from Context Associated and Deepak and all these people. But it's so interesting also that don't we learn so much from our clients who, like, all of a sudden one day I'm going along thinking I'm a great coach and then, bam, all of a sudden there's a challenge. And recovering from that challenge has taught so much.
I do. I you know, that old saying, the teacher teaches what she most needs to learn, and that's what I love about our work is that I do. I continue to learn from my clients.
I agree with you. Did I just call Phil Uber coach? That's great. I don't know if he'll like that, but, you know, it's just so funny because, I mean, I didn't even understand leadership. I didn't even know that I had leadership potential. And one day, you know, I was in a gathering of people, and Phil came up to me, and he just said, you know what, we've got this new course. And this is way back before 21st Century Leadership had actually left the tarmac. And he said, I've got this course, we're doing this course, and it is going to be the most mind-blowing thing you've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And that turned out to be actually an understatement, because I only expected it to be just better than everything I did. I didn't know it was going to be that much better than everything I'd done. So
it always works for me that Phil brings in his sense of humor. I'm bringing this up because humor has been a topic over the last week or so for me and my clients and friends, and humor humanizes.
Humanizes. We'll have our own little thing there. We're going to humanize the situation a little bit.
I'm
going
to humanize the situation.
Is that
like
Simonizing? Is that like rust-proofing your car? Yes, we spray you with a coat of humor.
Yes.
And go forth. Actually, I led a seminar for the National Speakers Association, a teleconference for all over the country a couple days ago for the National Speakers Association. It was really intense because I'm not sure that what I had to say to some of these folks was exactly what they wanted to hear.
Sure.
Would you like to hear a little bit about that? And I realize we're getting to the money whisperer here in a minute, but
yeah, sure. Because I think it's important that you know, to bring to the table that just because we are hearing something we don't want to hear, it doesn't mean that there's no opportunity in that. There's a benefit.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing you saying is keep listening, folks. Just hang with us. It's not going to be too painful.
Keep listening.
It's going to be just underneath an ice cream headache for just a second. Just underneath. And you can even pick the flavor of ice cream. Just think of your favorite flavor of ice cream for a second and just taste that, and then here we go.
Butter pecan.
There we go.
Well, and speaking of, I'm just going to run the numbers again. The toll-free number, 877-876-5227. Local number, 530-876-3222. Your thoughts, your questions are extremely important to us and all the listeners.
But especially that one, especially that guy right there.
Yeah.
That one listener over there? Yeah. You know, yes, you. Okay, I just thought I'd play. You know, many speakers that, first of all, I think everybody is funny. I think anybody who perceives humor, that literally that the potential for someone being funny is exactly corresponding to what they think is funny. So if they don't think much is funny, they have very little access to raw talent to be funny. If they love comedy and love comedians and even wish, oh my gosh, someday maybe I'll do that and have something in their way, let it be said that it isn't the potential to be funny that they lack, if they were to lack anything at all, which I don't think they would.
Sure.
I think that people, that if they enjoy humor, they have the potential to be funny. It's the ownership of that humor. That's one of the things.
Oh, so, that's a great way to put it.
Well, this notion of, because I taught a seminar at a Toastmasters convention. I did a keynote on humor for Toastmasters, and that was the contention is that you are already funny. And, you know, might have been my presentation, the material, but I've made up that there was a lot of resistance, and that I believe that in order for a public speaker or a presenter or a leader to access their humor more easily and develop it, they have to have a basic belief. Ideally, they would have a basic belief that they have funny, that they have funny as like a Zen quality. Funny is there.
Funny is there.
So I have worked with many public speakers as a coach who believe that they are not funny, and all they want me to do is cover that up for them with some humor. Write me something. Give me something funny to say.
Mm-hmm.
And truth of the matter is that'll last that one second. And there's nothing wrong with somebody having humor written for them, but even somebody who is performing pre-written humor by a third party or whoever, they still will be challenged to deliver that humor with fun and funny.
Yeah.
So either way. So the news for these people, the National Speakers Association, is the same story that Keith Johnstone, who wrote the book Impro for Storytellers, which is IMPRO for Storytellers, and all the improv people know Keith Johnstone is he's the granddaddy of Improv Olympics and one of the first people to popularize improv as a theater form in America. Now, there are other people that did that too, including Lee Strasberg, and there were other people, but it didn't actually become a theater staple until Keith and that generation of people came along. And his whole thing is, I love to fail. I took a seminar with Keith, and first thing he said, comes out, throws up his arms, I love to fail. If you have a problem with failure and you don't want to fail and you want to look good and that's all you're interested in, leave this course now.
Yeah.
So I went, wow. So, but the thing that's interesting is if it's about touching the lives of people, if it's about touching someone's heart, then wouldn't I be willing to lay a couple of eggs as a comedian if it's going to touch hearts, if it's going to transform lives?
Yeah.
But if all I'm interested in is looking good, then I am not going to be willing to take that risk. The call is to be of more of service than that, more so much of service that I'm willing to fail to touch lives. And if somebody doesn't have that, or they don't have a willingness, I don't have a lot to tell them about being funny.
Gotcha.
Am I on my soapbox? How am I doing? I'm just up here on my soapbox.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm riding I'm water skiing. That's it.
You're water skiing.
On a Janet Caleri show, don't you know?
on the Gianna Colieri Show.
Do you want to announce your numbers again or anything like that? You know, get some callers. Call in people.
877.
You got the money whisperer on the soapbox.
876-5227-530-876-3222.
You too can call 3222-2.
I really enjoy what you were just talking about, and I'm reminded of intention, which intention is, and I talk about this a lot on my show and with my clients, that intention is one of the magic words for me. And you know, is my intention to touch the heart of somebody, or is my intention to look a certain way? So that's a good question to ask oneself in any given moment or a situation. What is my intention? Check it out.
Yes.
I was recently at a car dealership, and I was talking to one of the salesmen and who sold me a car about a year and a half ago, and you know, he was saying, "Well, did I have a hidden agenda when I sold you the car?" And I said, "Well, I think so. I think you were attempting to appear a certain way, but I saw through that. And I let it go." And for all you salespeople out there, even if you're, you know, the top salesperson, I'm curious about that. All right, we're getting way off topic. But not really, because
who's we?
Whisperer.
Yeah, who's
right,
we? Because I like that, because that's the thing.
Well, yeah.
People often don't set their intention when they go in to create money.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
I just thought I'd throw that out there for fun.
Well, I've been looking forward to the show today because I knew I would be having a lot of fun.
Well, I think there's more. I think we should all undress. What do you think? You at home. You at home, wouldn't you be more comfortable naked? Come on.
Come on now. We won't see you. So the
wouldn't
question
that be funny?
Again. What?
Wouldn't that be funny? Just like there's all these people are throwing, you know, underwear out car windows and, you know, everything. Just, the Gianna Colieri Show will cause you to, you know, undress. Be careful. Don't try this at home.
Well, you know, my purpose in life is igniting human potential, so that would be evidence that it's working.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you want to hear a bit about the money whisperer, huh?
Yes, for the folks who are listening, I worked with Noel. I worked through the Money Whisperer with Noel, and I experimented with it, and it works. It works.
Yay!
And he knows my results. There was, I don't know, a couple months back, I doubled my income in 1 month. And it really, for me, do you mind, Noel, if I talk about my, like, what happened for me in working with this?
No, that's fantastic. Great.
Because I'm a testimonial.
Wow.
Yeah. For me, what I did was I focused more on my contribution to the world, being of service to others. Tapping into, you know, why it's important to me to do, you know, doing the work that I do, because magic happens for other people, and magic happens for me. And so going through the Money Whisperer myself, the focus on that rather than the focus on money, you know, for me it was more a primarily a focus on my contribution, and the money came. And I know I've said this before, be open to how things show up.
Hello.
Folks, tell ya, be open to how things show up. If you put something out there to a specific person, specific area, do not expect it to come back from that specific source. It may, but I'm telling you, be open to how things show up. It is amazing. It's amazing what happens. And for me, the Money Whisperer is a very simple, I don't know, is it a five-step process?
Well, I don't actually have it identified in steps. There are there are CDs for people to listen to in a workbook, and some data and some story power. So one of the things is people are writing their stories.
Mm-hmm.
They are getting in touch with what they value and where they've been investing themselves. And another notion is basically a Lynn Twist, who was Mother Teresa's assistant, who has written some wonderful materials, including The Soul of Money, Fundraising from the Heart. She has a very important notion of enough, not unlike someone with an eating disorder or what's called an eating disorder, the nature of which would be their body doesn't tell them when to stop eating. That
mm-hmm.
physical trigger is either insulated from them or not working properly. I think there are those of us in America that take our cues not from what is actually enough for us, but we take our cues from television and media as to what enough would be. And interestingly enough, Madison Avenue, bless their hearts, is all too willing to tell us it'll never be enough or you'll never be enough until you have this car or this next product. And that changes literally in 15-second bites. I mean, if I really was in a position to work fast enough to buy the one product, and 15 seconds later, they may come back and tell me that product is now obsolete, and I need the new version. So it is never enough. So not only which part of the Money Whisperer, which Janet Kaleri, by the way, was part of the materials development, because she, for those of you listening, supported me in the creation of the material as well by participating. And the inner psyche makes a deal. And, you know, this is talked about more in mythological circles, like the world that Robert Bly tends to write from and invites people into, which is more mythology and poetry and imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the hard, you know, psychology world talking about schemas and id, and all of that could be called here the inner psyche. But either way, the inner psyche really wants to protect me and help me not to look bad. So we could call it critic space as well.
Mm-hmm.
But for many people to create wealth or to move the energy that is in the way of the money flowing, they'll literally have to make a deal with this part of themselves. And people mostly have not done that.
And if so, when we make a deal with our psyche, does that mean that we accept our psyche?
Well, that's part of it. I mean, the idea that, for example, if, you know, I saw my father squander money, or if I saw my father adopt an attitude about money, if I think that that hasn't gotten in there somehow and isn't part of my underpinnings, in some way, I'm probably kidding myself.
Okay.
So to admit that it's there is to admit that, yeah, that psyche is even there, and requires negotiation to change on an unconscious level. I'm a certified hypnotist, and in my certification process, I really learned a lot about hypnosis and the power of suggestion to the unconscious and subconscious,
mm-hmm.
or subconscious, however you want to put it. So that part needs some movement, because someone will decide, not unlike an affirmation, which is like putting a layer on a cake, an affirmation is not necessarily going to penetrate years of unworkable behaviors around money that come from this original attitude. It kind of all needs to shift at once. Is that making sense?
Makes sense to me.
So the psyche is only, you know, it's only part of it. The decision of what's enough, because one of the things that fires the psyche off is this very interesting unconscious instinct that may have, in fact, sort of be running riot. So the instinct is to get enough. And yet, the frame that most people have about what is enough is far beyond what actually is enough for them. So most people don't know where their enough line is. What is enough?
Uh-huh.
You know?
Where is my enough line? And do we get to find that out when we listen to the Money Whisperer and go through the booklet?
That is a natural result. But okay. I actually don't even challenge people to have an enough line as much as to think about what is enough, because I want people to be considering not from a static blank that they filled in a workbook what's enough, but I want them to integrate it to an emotional level so that there's a feeling that kicks in, not unlike when it's time to stop eating at a meal. A feeling that kicks in.
I can't breathe anymore.
What's enough? Is enough for me, because somebody asked me today what car I'd like if I had any amount of money, and I said a 1956 Mercedes 300 convertible. It's probably in really perfect condition, a $150,000 car. I'm sure that people will call in and give you different prices as to the car's value. And yet, it is more than enough. But if I think I'm not good enough, if I don't impress my father with my car, then even a Mercedes classic 300 SL convertible worth $150,000 will not be enough unless my father is impressed with it.
Uh-huh.
Now I have externalized enough.
Yeah.
And I want to get some grounding around what is enough, because our whole society and culture, sustainability, and where sustainability and money come together, is also, it's sobering, but our power to help other people and service is a big part of where money generates and moves around. Money goes into motion when people are helping people.
Mm-hmm.
That make any sense?
Yes.
So service, the psyche, what's enough? What am I clear? Am I clear about my contribution in the world? And am I clear about what's fulfilling to me? And am I pursuing money through that? Or am I just trying to grab on because I really am just piling sandbags around myself to protect myself from the world, because I don't believe that, coming from love or fear, either we're coming from one or the other, and most people don't want to go near the word love and money as though that's the bathroom where the toilet is compared to the kitchen, which is over here. We got to keep these two separate in order to remain pure. Money and service go together. There's no reason. I call it selfish altruism on one end of the scale.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason why people should separate those two, and when they do, they have created a textbook profile dissociative condition for themselves in just one tiny little area, but they have disassociated from the reality of the way money works,
mm-hmm.
which is it's a flowing thing. And they turn it into a non-flowing thing, in which case it stops moving through their life, one way or the other. They either become a hoarder or a pauper, and so sometimes even overspending, debting.
Yeah. And the money and love go together is an example of what transpired for me when I was working through the Money Whisperer, as I was sharing with the folks out there that I was focused on, basically coming from a place of love. I was coming from a place of love and my contribution and what's important to me and what's happening for the world as a result of my service, and I doubled my income. Is that a good example to give?
I think that's a great example, and there are people that just by participating differently, without even setting that clear into Evan attention, will do just that. I mean, when I'm working with a client, and if I'm worried about if the client's going to pay me or not. Now, this could be any business. I'm an architect, let's say, and I'm worried about my client paying me. And so I may not participate as fully because I'm too busy being afraid that my client's not going to pay me. Mm-hmm. So I don't participate as fully, which, by the way, will send a very, very small, maybe, signal to the client that their architect is not quite, something's going on, and the architect doesn't do as good a job. The client may get a little nervous, wondering what's going on, and until they figure it out, you know what they might do? They might withhold the money.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the hidden agenda, and when somebody's gut feels good, they sign on the dotted line, and when somebody's gut doesn't feel good, they don't sign.
That's exactly it. And if we take the other way, which is like I got up at 7 o'clock this morning. This isn't a big deal. It would be a big deal if I got up at 4 a.m. to meet a client at 5 a.m, which I am willing to do. But I got up at 7, and I met a client at an office supply store. And we worked through all of this shopping that my client wanted to do and wanted my help with. And you know something? If it was 7:30, that'd be fine. If it was 7, that's fine.
Sure.
Because it is my desire that I am fully available and fully present for this client. And, you know, ideally, the money flows easier, I think, when there is not only dedicated service, but that the people who are writing the checks are inspired with the level of commitment. When I bring myself to a game or a situation or a business or a contract or delivering services, whatever it is, with so much focus and commitment that even the people that are on that team are inspired and raise their performance level to out of being inspired and any number of reasons. It is not even, everybody enjoys the way they spent that money on that person. In other words, they'll write you a check and actually enjoy it and actually hope that this check signifies how grateful they are and how happy they are.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, the client may think, this isn't exactly enough, but I'm going to write the check anyway because it was the agreed upon amount. And in wonderful cases, the client will actually add a little money on.
A little bonus.
Yeah. Which goes back to the good feeling.
Yes. Just going to give out the number again, 877-876-5227, 530-876-3222. Call in, ask questions. You have a free resource here. Call in and ask questions. Share your ideas. You don't have to use your real name.
Hi, this is Trixie. I'm calling from Camarillo.
Camarillo. No.
I pronounce it Camarillo.
Are you interested in sharing the agreement creation today, or would you like to just continue talking about the ideas and the notions and how this all came about?
That notion about is another frame on sales.
Yeah.
And it's that particular phrase came from Context Associated in a course called the Advancement of Excellence,
mm-hmm.
where it was just about enrollment and enrolling people in ideas, and it's basic sales. And yet, at the same time, by looking at it not with the language of selling, which a lot of people they don't like because they think, oh, salesmen this and salespeople that and sales in general. But truth of the matter is anybody who is walking around on 2 feet and breathing probably has ideas to sell, thoughts, desires, enrollment. They want people to come see the movie they'd like to see, or they'd like to eat at the restaurant that they'd like to eat at. They would like this group of people to invest in their idea. They would like permits from the county for their project, all of which probably require some enrollment. And people are oftentimes not clear of the value of the people that they're working with. So, in other words, I may think that you hold all the power, and by treating you that way, I actually never ask you what your value is in a given situation. What is your fulfillment? What's your joy in doing your work? And if we don't know what the win is for people. How are we in the position to really, take it to the next level? So there's that knowing my point of view. There's talking to the right people, which is identifying the prospect. It's actually basic sales. And yet the part that this notion of agreement creation touches on that oftentimes sales training doesn't cover as much is the importance of the follow-up process. It's a notion in sales called it's just the beginning, which is a lot of salespeople love to get the deal and then they move on. And yet enrollment is a relationship-based notion. So creating great agreements with people, and this goes into self-care, self-value, and the way that that agreements and thank you for letting me clear my throat there. That the way that people make agreements is never usually any bigger than their feelings of value, and their feelings of value are usually directly corresponding to their self-care. So if I don't take good care of myself, I don't have a good feeling in my stomach about me. And
sure.
Then from there, I'm. Somebody asks me, how much is that, doggy in the window, if I'm a doggy salesman, and I say half the price that I might have. Why? Because I'm setting my value. I think I'm setting a value on services or a product. I think I'm setting that value based on a grounded, clear, cogent set of standards that I hold, when actually I don't do it that way at all. I do it emotionally. Which is why I'm jokingly calling myself a emotional financial advisor, because people don't know.
The other thought that is coming to me now is this agreement creation may work very well in the interview process, because it's about knowing, the company's point of view and their joy and their wonder, and also sharing that about myself with that potential new employer.
Yeah, Randy Revelle, who you and I have both worked with, who passed away a few years ago, and some of you may remember him from LifeSpring. Many people know him from Context Associated, where he created with his wife Judy and Phil Holcomb and Elizabeth Revelle and the other core group of people at Context Associated, the Excellence Series, which Pursuit of Excellence, The Wall, and Advancement of Excellence. And Randy, just really a month before he died, said something to me on the phone that has stayed with me ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And, for those of you who knew Randy, great. He said, great. That's great.
Yes.
He said, great. And
then he chuckled.
Yeah, and then he would chuckle. And when he talked to me, he would say, "Well, Noel," and then there'd be a little pause, right? Because I was, I've always been a handful for my teachers.
Mm.
And
no way.
No, go on. And and he said, "Noel, I want to create a space of joy and wonder for my people, while simultaneously being very clear with them about what I want." And, man, that is like the phrase that I've been taking apart and photographing from every angle. And it says a lot.
Say it again.
I want to create a sense of joy and wonder, or a space of joy and wonder for my people, while simultaneously being very clear with them about what I want. This is one of the great disassociations in the business world.
Yes.
Is those who create a space of joy and wonder are often masters at it. And when we ask those people what they want, or even think about what they want, we might not have the foggiest idea or get an answer that even comes close to letting us know what they really want. Those who let us know what they want oftentimes do it so abrasively and with such boldness and starkness that it is like, it's like being asked to make love with the lights on if you in particular are not particularly a fan of bright light. So now all of a sudden we have no joy and wonder, but I know all about what this person wants, which sounds like a demand to many people.
Yeah.
or all these people over here who create magic, but we haven't a clue in the world what they want. So bringing those two together is a fantastic notion, and is a leadership challenge.
Yes, it is.
But, you know, not unlike all leadership challenges, they're solvable and meetable. Meetable, is that a word?
It is now.
Meetable is, I'm going to get right onto Wikipedia and throw it in.
I think that that's worked through simply with the trust and rapport and coming, like, knowing that the client is the relationship and consistently creating a space of joy and wonder and sharing what I want. So there is no hidden agenda. And where there's no hidden agenda, it's all on the table, a trust and rapport and respect is created.
You know, and also I think staying current, because you said it right at the beginning of your show, people put their energy toward the people they feel the closest to.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this client that I'm working with right now in an insurance company, and we're creating seminars,
mm-hmm.
you know, we were having a talk about, because it didn't just go into what car would you have, you know, what else would you do? And so I know that my guy has a real desire to help kids and protect animals.
Sure.
And one that I don't think he's completely fulfilled in. I think he wants to do more. So because I know that he would do that with more money, I'm more inspired to help him make the money.
Well,
are you there?
Yes, I'm right here.
There we go. So,
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hi there.
Oh, boy. Janet, I couldn't miss calling in. It's Jay from Japan.
Oh, well, you must know Noel Murphy. Jay,
hi, Noel.
I apologize because we didn't hear a beep. So, hi.
Oh, okay. Now, I've been listening quietly here. I hope I haven't made any noise on the radio.
All things are quiet in Japan. I was just there 2 weeks ago.
Yeah? You should call.
Where are you?
Next time, call.
Where are you in Japan?
I'm in Kagoshima in southern Kyushu.
Oh, beautiful.
But I'll be in Boston in a couple weeks, so when are you going to be there?
I'm not going to be there for a while.
I'll be there in March.
Noel's going to be storytelling.
I'll be there in March.
In March? Okay. I'll be there probably end of February, first week of March.
Ooh, so,
yeah.
Okay. This has been great listening to you guys.
Thank you, Jay. I'm glad to hear that.
Especially the part about humor.
Yeah.
And all of that. You know, and this whole thing about, you know, there's this whole kind of effort out there with marketing and stuff to, you know, whoever has the most toys when he dies wins kind of thing. I think it comes back to this whole issue of, you know, people that's kind of filling a space that people don't have purpose, or they're looking, you know, trying to figure out what really their life is about. And I know, Noel, you had a book about Journey Back to Purpose or something like that?
It's a CD.
A CD? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, the whole notion of that is getting really grounded in you know, the basic notion of part of it, what is it that sparks our greatness? What is it? Because I have a module on genius state that mm-hmm. pretty much says that all of us have genius, not just Stephen Hawking or Einstein or Feynman or even some of the artists like Jackson Pollock or Georgia O'Keeffe, that we all have genius. And that the way to access that is to be very clear about our greatness, number one, and number two, look for where that greatness meets the hunger of the world. And we are usually called into our highest selves in that place. And when we collaborate with either the person that we're supporting, if they have a hunger in their heart and we're feeding it just by our presence, or we're in collaboration in another situation to solve that kind of hunger, that we will find ourselves in our genius state. And it'll be much clearer to people that they may already be living their life purpose. that the purpose is self-expression and that the purpose is contribution, more than accumulating enough toys to die properly.
Do you think people have a difficult time sometimes identifying their purpose and what's blocking, or how can they find it better?
What do you think on that one, Janet?
It's difficult to hear you, Jay, so would you repeat the question?
It's just about the challenge sometimes I or other people may have in identifying and finding their purpose, or, you know, either they're blocking or I'm just not clear about it. How does someone go about really finding their purpose?
Well, it's definitely a process, and the first step is to ask yourself what would you walk over a broken glass for? Like, what would I walk over broken glass for? What have I always stood for? What would I walk over, you know, walk into a fire for? Like, you're so passionate about something, and it's usually an experience that you want for the world and for yourself. And the purpose is, the purpose can be manifested and contributed through many vehicles, like our, you know, our jobs and our hobbies and our relationships. So there's a like a fiery passion inside each person, and your entire life that has been ignited in different moments and situations, and you can look at that and ask yourself, why is that important to me, and what do I want, you know, in that, what do I want to happen for the world? And just to let you know, we have about one more minute.
Well, Jay, isn't Janet hot? Can we talk about how hot Janet is for just like 3 seconds? Okay, I'm done.
I'd walk through fire on glass for Janet.
Flaming glass.
Woohoo!
You too, Noel.
Thank you very much, Jay.
It's great talking to you guys.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Jay calling from Japan. Thanks again, Jay.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for having me, Janet. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I hope I didn't sound like Elvis there. Thank you very much.
Some closing words.
You're the gift. You know, I want to plug extraordinarylearning.com, 21st Century Leadership, drrupertopie.com for my comedic side, sightforsound.com.
Mm-hmm. Well, Noel, it's always a pleasure and a privilege, and I had such a great time today with you, and as always, I feel so inspired in your presence.
Thank you, Janet.
And thank you, folks, for listening. Until next time, create an amazing, amazing day for yourselves.
Well,
bye-bye for now.
All right.
You're welcome. Bye.